So I'll be talking about fundamental trade-offs between limited sensing, sensing diversity, and sensing capacity. This is with two of my students, Shoshin Aron and Mark Chizo. So let me give you a brief outline for my talk. I will briefly look at some of these applications, counting, detection, search, localization, and estimation. All of these have some kind of combinatorial aspects to it. We'll then consider two problems that you often have to consider in sensor networks. One problem is about what is the minimum number of sensors to do these different types of tasks, and what is the best modality, sensing modality, to use in order to do these different tasks. And then a second problem is, once you have figured out what the minimum sensors that you need to use and what the best modalities are, you may want to ask the question, how do you do efficient inferencing over these set of sensors to minimize the communication cost? We'll spend very little time on the second problem. My main concern is the first problem in this talk. So the technical things that I'm, tools I'm going to use in order to come up with bounds for these types of problems would be, the first problem will primarily deal with information theoretic limits, and then the second problem will be based on random walks and graphs. So then finally I will look at different results. The results are of the following nature. I will try to map different scenarios, which means these problems, into different modalities. What is the optimal modality to use? And then characterize trade-offs between performance while using minimum sensors in this modality and comms and so on. And then briefly I will touch upon efficient sensor networking using the theory of coalescing random walks and graphs. So here briefly in one slide are the set of applications that we are interested in. The discrete, I call them discrete because counting is a, so counting such as the number of people in the sensor network or the number of objects in the sensor network, all of these are discrete kind of quantities. So you may have a seismic sensor, acoustic sensor, a camera or whatnot, and you may be interested in simply counting the number of objects in a sensor field. A second problem is one of localization, where you're not only interested in counting, but also trying to figure out where exactly the different targets or people or objects are. Lots of people have studied this, and these are some of the references which I'm putting here. On the other hand, there is also a continuous aspect to it, and still it can be combinatorial, and the combinatoriality arises because of what is known as sparsity. So sparsity is basically the fact that a signal can be represented in some basis, maybe known or unknown, by very few coefficients. And the number of coefficients is called as sparsity. There are a number of people who have worked on this, not on the sparsity, but applications of this. MIMO radar has been introduced, field reconstruction by a number of people. Rob Nowak here has done a lot of work on sparsity problems and things like that. You can also apply these kinds of this sparsity, meaning that you can represent a signal by few coefficients for imaging, scattering medium, and so on. So that's all. Those are the sets of applications that whatever I'm going to talk about may be applicable to. And so, problem one, in the discrete aspect of the problem, we have different types of sensors in the sensor field. Low-resolution wide-beam sensors, narrow-beam sensors, limited-range sensors, random beams, and so on. And here, we want to understand how many targets are there. We want to count those targets. We want to detect activity. We want to understand where these targets are, and so on. On the other hand, as I was saying, this is the same thing as basically I was talking in the previous slide. So you have a signal X that is measured by a sensor field, and we know that it can be represented by very few coefficients in some wavelet basis or some basis that we may or may not know, okay? And this is the other problem on imaging scattering medium. So the main point here is this, the problem one that we are focused on. Here we are not interested really in the sensor networking aspects, but really only interested in trying to understand which suite of sensors will work best to do different types of tasks. In parallel, there is this problem too, and that deals with efficient sensor network. Once you have boiled it down onto a minimum set of sensors, you may be interested in how to communicate in order to, or how to do in-network processing in order to figure out, in order to infer in an optimal way while reducing communication costs. Main rules to remember is communication costs are much greater than computational costs. Communication costs for short distances is much cheaper than long distances. And then in summary, therefore, you want to process locally, transmit locally, and so on. So these are all things that are clear from previous sets of talks as well. So let me now get into the problem one setup. Basically, we have some problem element X, which has some probability distribution. It goes through a sensing channel. You can change the sensing channel by choosing your modality theta. So modalities could be limited range, narrow beam, wide beam, diversity, which means random beams, and so on. Okay, so you could change this channel and get an observation Y, and your task is to estimate what X is in some manner such that this and this are close. So other sensor resources that I won't be talking too much about would be communications and communications in the first problem one. Now, environment, you could have many different types of environment. You could have clutter. So in addition to X coming into Y, you may actually see spurious things which do not exist in the, so imagine if X is the set of all target positions, then you may get spurious locations which do not really contain targets. The other environmental variable, therefore, the clutter density may be an environmental variable. Target density is a different variable. Target dimension could be another environmental variable. And again, these are the problem instances. We want to find the optimal resources for each problem instance. So I'm just repeating here, what are the modalities? One is this narrow beam modality. Then you could have a wide beam modality, but because the SNR has to be constant, you can operate this only in low resolution, whereas this could be perhaps operated in high resolution. You could also have random beams. Again, you want to make sure that you're using the same SNR. So these are the different modalities. You could also have a slightly different modality, which is you could activate a random set of sensors within your sensor network. Okay? So the task is to find out which modality minimizes your sensing resources. So let's try to understand what this modality does when you have linear models. Most of the things that we'll be talking about here deals with linear models, but certainly this probability, since I have described this channel as a probability, conditional probability distribution, many of these techniques can, with higher levels of difficulty, can be implemented, can be derived as well. Okay? But linear techniques, we can get concrete answers. So you have a linear model. G is a sensing matrix. Y is the M sensor observations. X is the target locations. In the case of sparsity, it could be a random process. So scenarios are, or modalities are, you could have a limited range, or which means G is close to identity, so Y, and then you have G, so you get Y1 equals X1 plus noise, Y2 equals X2 plus noise, and so on. You could have a wide beam, in which case you can have a sum of all the X's plus noise. This is the extreme case of a wide beam where you look at the whole sensing range. Or you could have diversity, which means that if you have random beams, you could locate the G matrix is such that it is sparse, but it contains, it is non-zero at sparse locations, but normalized for SNR. Okay? But you can also achieve diversity through other means, such as you could have simply independent components, which are all contiguous. You could have random activation, which is what I'm talking about here. And you could also do this through in-network processing, which is like network coding type ideas. Okay, so these are the various types of modalities. And basically, on the we can, to complete the problem setup, we need what is called as a target model, the clutter model or the obscuration models. So what is our target model that I'm going to talk about, that I'm going to consider in this talk? At position k, the target takes on the value ak times ik, where ak is the random amplitude, and ik is a Bernoulli random variable. It's with probability alpha it is 1, and probability 1 minus alpha it is 0. So alpha can be thought of as your target density. So if I have n location on an expected level, alpha times n is the total number of targets, and alpha is like the density of the number of targets. The clutter model can be modeled using what is called as Z-channel. Z-channel should be familiar to people who are familiar with information theory. Basically, what happens is X goes through and gives you some value Z, maybe with noise. Whereas if there is no target in some location, then with probability P, it will construct a target. And probability 1 minus P, there is no target. So you could have a composite model which says that Y equals G of Z, X, NC plus N, where NC is your clutter noise coming through this channel. So to understand this problem, we want to formulate it in a, we want to capture all the essential details of this. For this reason, we formulate this notion of capacity. Basically, capacity informally means that the minimum sensors you need to identify X within some accuracy V0. So here, N is the target dimension, M is the number of observations, K is the number of targets. So if you want within epsilon level of probability, you ask what is the maximum value of the number of target locations divided by the number of sensors you need. The fewer sensors you get, the larger is this capacity. Therefore, you're asking the question, what is the maximum number of locations that you can get with M sensors? Said another way, for a given set of locations, what is the minimum number of sensors that you could use in order to make sure that you can reconstruct X within some distortion D0. Now, this sensing capacity term itself is not new. Rachelin, Nagy, and Kostla from CMU have introduced this in 04, but they introduced this notion called sensing capacity, where it is the number of targets divided by the number of sensors, and they consider discrete X. Now, why we want to do number of locations by M is because our notion of capacity is intrinsically related to the target density, which is K by N, and the clutter density, the modalities, and so on. To get an explicit formula for relating the sensing capacity to these objects, we consider this notion. So as I said earlier, larger the C, you get smaller the number of sensors. That's what the translation in your mind should mean. So if you forget the math, you just keep saying larger capacity is always good, because that means fewer sensors can figure out a larger number of larger area. Okay? Now, as I said, I also define target density, which is alpha equals k by n. Diversity at the jth sensor is the number of non-zero terms, meaning number of targets that couple to that sensor, divided by the target dimension, a number of locations, so L by N. You could also define it in a different way, but this is more convenient. So the diversity is really the number of independent paths that go from the different targets to a sensor, or from a single target to the different sensors. So both ways you can define diversity. It doesn't really matter. So now, as I said earlier, capacity is a function of the target density. Delta is the clutter density. Beta is the, what was beta? Theta is the modality, and beta is the diversity. So basically, you can play with optimization variable here, and these are actually the first two things are given to you.
How is delta defined? Clutter density?
Clutter density is like a usually the way it is defined is it's a Poisson random variable which has a rate delta. So it's actually also a function of SNR, but we want to make sure that you do not cheat. You want to use the same SNR across the different modalities. So we have this result which says that, and it results in an optimization problem. The sensing capacity, this D0 is, you want to achieve the capacity such that you can reconstruct X within a distortion D0 is smaller than or equal to the mutual information per observation dimension divided by the number of balls of distortion D0 in X per signal dimension. So it relates the following fundamental quantity. As I said, the capacity is a notion of, with a given set of sensors, what is the maximum number of locations you can figure out to X within distortion D0. And it relates that object to the following object, because mutual information fundamentally relates number of X elements that are identifiable from Y. And the denominator is number of D0 balls that are in X. So for those of you who are not familiar with information theory, let me just go through this exercise. So here is your signal space. It consists of many different points, many different X and sequences. And here is your observation space. It consists of many different sequences as well. Now the main problem is that many signals in X map to the same Y. Therefore, with that observation Y, you cannot figure out which X was the reason that you got that Y. Therefore, you cannot essentially decode that X from Y. So what you want to do is, rather than decode the exact X, you want to cover X with some distortion balls of this size, such that you only decode within some radius D0. So once you construct these balls, you need to construct these distortion balls so that you can get some capacity. So the capacity will increase if the mutual information is very high, which means that you can decode many sequences, which implies that you can actually reduce M in order to get reliable reconstruction, which means you can increase the capacity. Okay? I hope this is kind of clear. And basically, you can see it basically says something which has to be true, right? The number of sequences that are identifiable divided by the number of balls has to look like the capacity. Now, there's a proof, but I don't want to go through this proof. It involves a slight generalization of Fanon's inequality, but I guess I don't have the time to do that, right? Especially with my PowerPoint fiasco. So let's actually come to accounting problems, okay? So we have two choices in this counting problem. We have a small range or a narrow beam that you could use, or you could use a large range or a wide beam, which means at a much lower resolution. So these are your start choices that you have. What you want to find is the sum of all the targets, meaning count the total number of targets. So which modality is optimal for doing this task? So in this case, it's not hard to figure out that wide beam is actually the winner. So here is the way I will try to argue this. Consider two choices, right? Identity channel versus all one channel. Now the main problem with the identity channel is that you require n different sensors, because you want to cover the whole space, because you can't miss targets. The all one channel, you can presumably get away with just one sensor. So if you can actually perform as well as the identity channel, then you might as well use one sensor with very low resolution. Indeed, in the Gaussian case, it's not very hard to see, use manipulating the mutual information, that if X is Gaussian and noise is Gaussian, X is a Gaussian random vector and noise is also a Gaussian random vector, or X is a binary Bernoulli process and noise is also Bernoulli, then a sufficient statistic is just taking the sum of all the yj, which just simply looks within a scaling factor, just like the all one channel. So again, as I said, wide is therefore the winner. Now this is only true in these cases, which are not interesting. And the sufficient statistic does not hold in general. It's not very hard to see this. But there is a very interesting theorem by Ramzamir and Feder, which states that if I have a linear transformation, then the differential entropy after a linear transformation looks like the Gaussian entropy. So if you were to replace each one of these variables, which are all supposed to be independent, which we usually have it to be independent, by the corresponding Gaussians with the same variance, then the entropy you get after a linear transformation ends up looking like, in the asymptotic limit, as though it came from a Gaussian rank variable. So since we are considering linear models, we can then therefore show that the mutual information between the counting random variable and y of m starts looking like the counting random variable and the sum of yj. So in that sense, therefore, at least in the asymptotic limit, using one sensor with very wide beam is in general quite remarkable. It is sufficient to do counting. Okay? Now, detection is the same story. I'm not going to belabor this point. Basically, it turns out to be a hypothesis testing problem. You want to test the null hypothesis against, it's not greater than or equal to zero, yes, it should be greater than zero. And basically, the same argument follows like the previous case, at least for positive random variables. So if you were to take an energy detector, which is wide beam, then it will perhaps be a problem. Our main task here, I just did a warm-up exercise with counting and detection. Our main task is to understand localization, because it turns out to be the hardest problem. So our choices here are wide beam, which is essentially we can ignore it because it's rank deficient, meaning all ones are not going to reveal to you targets, so we don't even have to consider it. What about narrow beam? Is that good or bad? What about intermediate region where you have narrow, but not too narrow, but intermediate? How about random beams? And what are the advantages of this over these other things? So the narrow beam, which is too narrow, you require too many sensors because the whole region needs to be covered, which means that the capacity is definitely going to be less than or equal to one, because if I have n locations, you need to have at least n sensors. Moreover, it turns out that when you actually have target density going to zero, the capacity goes to zero as well. The reason is that you can actually upper bound it, you can compute the minimum probability of error. It's like orthogonal coding. So each top, so either it's 1000 or 01000 and so on, and your SNR is bounded, but your entropy is kind of increasing like log n, therefore your probability of error doesn't go to zero. So this can also be thought of in terms of like a needle in a haystack. So if you have very, very small target density, essentially you do not have enough coupling with your signal, observation signal, and you're in an low SNR regime. And the trick in the low SNR regime, when you look at capacity in the low SNR regime in information theory, it turns out that you cheat a little bit because this SNR is defined SNR per bit. So you get an extra log n factor, and therefore this log n cancels out, and you kind of make the probability of error go to zero. We don't have a similar thing going on here. Therefore, we have to suffer the fact that the probability of error cannot go to zero. So what about intermediate regimes, right? That means that I have some contiguous things like this. Will that work? First of all, the coverage we should make sure that the number of contiguous elements have to be bigger than n divided by n. So as you see, this also has a filter structure, so this may have some interesting implementational issues. But unfortunately, it turns out that the capacity for this is upper bounded by the log of 1 plus alpha SNR over L. So the larger the contiguous region, you're going to suffer a huge SNR loss. So in summary, L cannot be so small due to coverage. If you have very large L, it reduces capacity by a humongous factor. Therefore, essentially intermediate regimes or any deterministic ways of thinking about it is not going to work out. So we will show that random modalities is actually significantly superior. And here is the main observation to prove this. If you look at what we are looking at is the mutual information between xn and ym conditioned on g. Right. Now g is itself a random variable. Therefore, you could express it if g is independent of xn, just like you do in MIMO systems, you could express it as xn comma ym comma g. Because by chain rule, this will be I of xn comma g plus I of xn comma ym given g. Now I of xn comma g is zero because g and xn are correlated, so you can convince yourself this and this are actually equal. But what we are interested in is a different equality, which is I of xn comma ym plus I of xn comma g given ym. Now, since this is kind of an unknown channel, meaning G is not revealed to you here. G was revealed to here. G was not, is not revealed to here. We are in the regime where this typically turns out to be zero. So all the gain that we get for sensing capacity is because of the second term, where we are asking what is the what is Xn, the mutual information between Xn and G conditioned on Yn. So this also gives us a design tool, because we can now start asking the question, what is the best G that one wants to select? What's the best modality among the random set of modalities so that you can match the target distribution to the sensing channel? So we can essentially also prove all along what I have been talking about is just an upper bound. And the reason we could not prove a lower bound for those cases is because we could not use the Shannon random coding argument. But now once you select G to be random, you can essentially go through the proof of the Shannon random coding argument, because G basically, for Shannon random coding argument works as follows. For each message, you take a random code for it. Now G turns out to be the random code designed particularly for X. So therefore, by selecting the G, you can imitate the random coding argument and essentially prove that the capacity upper bound is met by a corresponding lower bound. Now, deterministic G, the second term is zero, so you get no gain from this. All your gain has to come from this, and you cannot get the entire coding gain. So you have to essentially resort to a random coding argument or a random channel in order to gain all of these things. We'll consider two cases. One is the full diversity case, where G is a full matrix, and the partial diversity case, where G is a sparse matrix. Okay, so just to point out what results we have, XK is AK IK, as I said earlier. The full diversity case, the capacity turns out to be the log of 1 plus alpha SNR divided by the rate distortion function. The second thing is, wherever things are non-zero, that is the amount of bits required to encode the X. The first term simply comes from the Bernoulli IK random variable, and the second term comes from the normal random variable. So that's why you have two terms here. So on the we have a complete result for the full diversity case. For the partial diversity case, it is in terms of this expected value, where you have to consider the expected values over different overlaps between the target and the G matrix. And you can see the huge gain you get. In the case of deterministic ways of designing G, you would have gotten log of 1 plus alpha SNR over L. Now that L factor completely vanishes here. Indeed, having full diversity gives you huge benefits over deterministic designs. Similarly, you have a J variable here, which kind of cancels out the L. So for reasonable diversities, this gives you a lot of benefit over that. Okay. Again, I have a proof, but I'm not going to go through that. I just want to plot a few curves and end this talk. So here is the upper and lower bounds for the sensing capacity. Again, I want to remind you that smaller capacity implies, actually larger capacity implies fewer sensors. Sorry, shouldn't be read smaller, but larger. So the larger capacity implies fewer sensors. And this is your upper bound, and here is our lower bound. This is like an ML achievable bound. There is a gap. We think we can kind of close it, but basically it behaves in the same exact way. Another interesting point that you come up with is when you look at what the sensing capacity does as a function of target density. So as you can see, as SNR increases, of course the sensing capacity increases. But interestingly, just like the narrow beam situation, when the target density goes to zero, the capacity actually goes to zero as well. So again, this goes back to the low SNR argument that I gave. If you are in a low SNR regime and you fix the SNR and you don't change the SNR, you don't count the SNR as SNR per bit, because there is no way of doing that, then you suffer the same exact problem, because multiplying with the G matrix to your identity to your X is like multiplying with a constant SNR, is like multiplying a unitary transformation, and that unitary transformation does not provide you any benefits, so the capacity actually goes to zero. So fundamentally, no matter what, in a low SNR, in the low target density regime, you have to suffer this problem. That is, you have to let the number of sensors approach infinity much faster than the number of locations in order to get any reliable performance. You also see a different effect, which is very interesting. That is, you don't really need full diversity to get all the benefits of full diversity. In fact, there is a saturation point beyond which there is no reason to increase your diversity. So you could have a sparse matrix, and you can stop at that and get all the benefits that you want. You can achieve almost all the gains with small enough diversity. And here are the trade-off curves between target density and diversity. If you have very high target density, then you need very little diversity. When you have very high target density, very low target density, then you require higher diversity, which completely makes sense. It compensates one for the other. Higher target density, you have much higher SNR, therefore you can separate out the signals much more easily, whereas in the lower target density, you cannot separate them out, and you have to increase your diversity. So I haven't talked about all the scenarios, and it actually turns out that detection we did, if you need wide beam, counting you need wide beam, search, you need a very diverse structure with random beams to get all the coding gain that you can get. Extended object, we have been working on that, and it seems like it turns out that you need a combination of some contiguous things plus diversity. And then a clutter, interestingly, it turns out that you actually need to look at the same place by many, many sensors. You cannot have just a single set of sensors looking at different places. In other words, you need to have redundancy to get rid of clutter, because you can never separate out spurious target locations with real target locations just with looking at different places. You need many sensors mixing and matching in order to kind of remove the cluttered locations. Okay. I wanted to talk about efficient sensor networking, but if the time is lost. Okay, no problem. Let me end this talk here. All I wanted to say was that because diversity, you can get full diversity benefits with partial diversity, you can essentially reduce the communication cost in a limited sensing regime, because you get diversity through network coding. So if you can do that, then communication cost with diversity L will scale as n L log L, whereas with full diversity, it will scale as mn log n. So you can get a tremendous benefit using smaller diversity and get essentially all of the performance gains using our coalescing random walks idea, but I guess I don't have talks. I don't have time here. And if you were to use Gossip, the difference is much bigger, because Gossip will take mn squared log n, whereas our coalescing random walks will take, with the same Gossip algorithm for the partial diversity, will require nl squared log n. Basically, with coalescing random walks, you get rid of one of the n factors here. Okay. So that's an order of magnitude improvement. So I was going to talk through this random coalescing walks and the fact that if you were to use Gossip, you get this type of a situation, whereas if you were to use coalescing, it's kind of the amount of time to reach consensus is actually pretty flat. Okay. So let me conclude. I have introduced the notions of capacity, which is the maximum number of locations per sensor for error probability to go to zero. Diversity is the independent path per target. Sparsity is number of targets per location. And we figured out what the optimal modalities for these different things are. We showed that capacity is infinity if noise is zero. I guess I didn't show that, but it's easy to show that. And small diversity leads to capacity equals zero. Large diversity, capacity is finite. But for moderate target density, capacity is reasonably large. Small density, capacity actually goes to zero, which is surprising because the number of measurements has to increase significantly faster than the measurements. Thank you.